Plenty of stuff over at bangthebook.com as well. My conference tournament previews for just about all of them. Waiting on offshore odds for the Big West and the WAC. Those should be coming here this afternoon. And those previews will go up right away when those get posted. All my Major League Baseball stuff for the lead up to the season available over there as well. Get the guide on Amazon $4.99, or you can get it in PDF form for free over at bangthebook.com. And of course, we're still covering soccer, tennis, golf, NASCAR, UFC. God knows what else we've got going on over at bangthebook.com, but it sure is a lot here during a very, very busy time of the year. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Three guests on the program here today. The leadoff hitter is Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, brother?
Man, it's going well. How are you doing on this fine Wednesday?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always. I'm going to throw you off for the rest of the week here because I know you usually join me on Thursdays when we talk college football and the NFL. But let's go ahead and talk a little bit of college football because 5.5 months away from the start of the season, and I'm sure you're knee-deep in doing research already, taking a look at some of these teams. One of the things that you do like to use to your advantage is watching spring games. And all of a sudden, with these coronavirus concerns, Cincinnati has canceled theirs, and I'm sure they won't be the only team to do it.
Yeah, I mean, especially lately, I mean, the last 3-4 years, you could get, you know, tape on 40 or 50 teams. And I get it, you know, a lot of people roll their eyes on spring games, but at least it's an early look at teams. Particularly, you can get an early look at, you know, the freshmen that have already enrolled. And, you know, if you need to, you know, replace the quarterback, you get your first look at a guy. Let's face it, you can't physically go to all these practices. So I do get a lot out of spring games. It's just not that the game, if the announcers are really good, they'll kind of give you an inside depth of what's been going on all throughout spring practice. So it's a good little, I would say, syllabus slash cliff notes in an hour and a half, 2 hours that you can get on those 40 or 50 teams that usually televise it. But I mean, we'll see. I can tell you the way things are going. Yeah, it doesn't look like there's going to be 40 or 50 of them I'll be able to watch. I'm all about taking precautions and whatnot, but it seems like maybe some are going a little overboard. I don't want to get too much into politics, so my Twitter feed will get lit up.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. But, you know, it has to be discouraging for you because you've been very transparent about this, that, you know, you did well in the NFL last year, but you had a difficult college football season. It has to be discouraging because I know that you have made a very, very strong commitment to doing a lot of that preseason research here for college football, doing what you always do in terms of grabbing some season win totals, some games of the year lines, stuff like that. But I know that you kind of wanted to wipe the slate clean, refocus yourself on college football, and then now you get this. And that's got to be pretty discouraging, especially considering that, you know, you kind of had this sort of mapped out, this sort of blueprint in your mind.
Well, I mean, you got to be able to react to what's, you know, the given variables given to you. But yeah, I made some life changes to get ready for the upcoming football season. That's how much serious I am to get ready for this upcoming season. So it'd be a shame if I can't properly get ahead of it. But it's all right. I'm not going to sit here and bitch and moan about it. I'll figure out ways to get after it.
Yeah, I know you definitely will. And anything, you know, in your early research that you've picked up on, any brutal scheduling situations for teams or anything like that?
You know, I tweeted about one that I thought was about as brutal as it gets, and it's UL Monroe. So you got to like that you're going over the Warhawks schedule in late February, early March. But, I mean, here's something to keep in your back pocket. They get a bye ULM in week two. So it's not like last year where almost every single team had two bye weeks. It's back to your traditional one team's got, you know, each team's got one bye week. So UL Monroe has a bye in week two, and then they play 11 straight games. That includes a stretch where UL Monroe plays 6 road games in 7 weeks. 6 in 7 weeks. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. So let's just put it this way. not looking, because of that poor scheduling for Ewell and Monroe, not looking like I'm going to have an overseason win ticket on the Warhawks this year.
I love it. UL Monroe football getting some runtime here during conference tournament week on Bang the Book Radio. But again, important to think about these things, because that's something that a lot of people will look to attack early in the win total betting process, because, you know, schedule analysis is very, very important. So something for you to keep in mind, obviously, during the season. And I know we'll talk about it when we get to that point, but especially here in this win total market, not that UL Monroe is going to have, you know, any games of the year lines or anything like that, but this is a relatively solid program in the Sun Belt. They've, you know, had their ups and downs, obviously, like most of these teams have, but I know you mentioned this, that, you know, for the most part, I mean, they've been respectable, and now they run into a schedule where it may be difficult for them.
Yeah, I mean, they've won at least four. They've been consistent in that 4-5-6 win type of program. They've won at least four games in 15 in their last 16 seasons. So I'm anxious to see what the win total comes out at. You know, 4.5, probably looking to bet under. But if it's already priced in, which it won't be, I mean, people aren't looking at the scheduling spot. If it's, you know, lower than that, and basically it does come down to numbers. And again, don't be a prisoner of just marking wins and losses on your when you're doing your season win totals. Actually figure out what try to do a power rating and try to give like a win percent for each game. That's the much more correct method of doing a season win total. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes out for them. But you're right, they've been consistent. And hopefully I get something that's a little bit out of that range, like a 5.5 or so. That would be interesting to play the under. It'll make my card.
Yeah, and that home game that they have in that stretch with 6 of 7 on the road is Appalachian State, which is, you know, obviously no picnic with how good the Mountaineers are year in and year out. But, I mean, look, it's not that crazy to be talking about this stuff, because you and I have discussed this a million times over. I've discussed it with other guests on the show that, I mean, the timelines are so accelerated. I don't know when we get season win totals, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be earlier than we ever have before. And that may end up meaning, you know, next month sometimes. So not a bad idea if you get some free time. Maybe you're not a baseball bettor, like I know you're not. A good opportunity to catch up a little bit on college football.
Yeah, last year, Bet Online, just one book offshore, but they released a lot of stuff the week of the NCAA tournament, the week of the first round. They released a lot of college football stuff. So, yeah, that was early. As far as stateside, Jersey was the first last year. They released every single season win total end of May, which was similar to what South Point was doing for 3-4 years prior to that. Every single team, by the end of May, you got to be ready to go.
Well, and with Chris Andrews back in the fold now at South Point, now that his health is in a better spot, they probably do try to hit the market first this year, I think. So, again, something that you want to keep in mind here. And I remember that now. When we talked about, you know, Bet Online posting those during the NCAA tournament, I remember you and I MFing them all over the place for doing that, because no one's focused on that. And they do it on the busiest college basketball week of the year. I remember that now that you mentioned that. We weren't pleased, to say the least.
It makes, you know what, I've tamed my, let's just say, enthusiasm for being very kind of ticked off at that. And here's why. It makes sense from a book. I mean, you got a lot of people that are betting. You get a lot of people that don't normally bet college basketball, but they usually bet college football. They're into the market. Why not hold their money up for an extra time period? So you got new signups, trying to get extra money. So, yeah, it's not ideal for a guy like myself, but I understood why they did it.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And I guess with that, we'll transition over to the college basketball side of things here, because, again, that's just what everybody's talking about here with conference tournament week. And we're going to hit on a few of the major ones here, including one that starts today out there in Las Vegas at T-Mobile Arena, 3 o'clock Eastern time. The first game, obviously, that's 12 o'clock local time. Utah and Oregon State starts things off there in the Pac-12, but Oregon's your favorite. Arizona is your second favorite, but they've really underachieved based on the talent that they have there for this season. Then you've got a lot of, maybe, I guess they'd call them sort of interchangeable teams. I think Colorado's pretty good. I think plus 475 is a bad price for them as a 6 seed playing the extra game. UCLA and USC, we were watching them when I was out there a couple weeks ago. They've come out strong here late in the year. Overall impressions here of the Pac-12 and maybe a team that you kind of like from a future standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, wide open tournament. I mean, any one of 6-7 teams, in my opinion, they could win it. And I mean, if you're looking for the longest of long shots, I mean, your 12 seed Washington is a very dangerous team in the opening game against Arizona today. I know they're sitting right around a 4.5 point underdog in that one, but they just got done beating Arizona not too long ago. So that's a dangerous Washington team, the 12 seed. Oregon's been really good, at least from a consistency aspect when it comes to how they perform in the Pac-12 tournament. I like looking at that, how do coaches do, you know, in conference tournaments. Does it mean something to them? They are the one seed, but I don't see a tremendous amount of value there. Why not go with the hottest team? I mean, they did lose by two against USC that stopped their seven-game winning streak, but they're still playing their best ball of the season, and I really like Mick Cronin, and that their fan base should travel relatively well here. UCLA is a team that obviously needs a couple of wins if they want to get off the bubble here. 8-1, I don't think that's a tremendous amount of value, but they would be a sleeper pick, but wouldn't be a bit surprised if the Bruins cut down the Nets.
Well, and I think that's a good couple of good questions, a couple of good talking points coming out of what you said there. First, I want to talk specifically about team performance, and second, we'll talk about something that's very real, but maybe kind of a narrative-based thing. As far as team performance goes, what are you looking at? Are you looking at the full body of work? Are you looking at all of conference play? Or are you maybe looking at, you know, how teams finished up the season?
Great question. I probably like to look more at how teams finished up the season. And I'll use a team from the Pac-12, specifically last year. Oregon, if you remember, really started it. They switched their lineup up a little bit to a smaller lineup. They started playing elite level defense at the end of the regular season, carried right over into the Pac-12 tournament where they ended up winning it, and then gave Virginia a run for their money in the NCAA tournament after Oregon won a couple games there. So I usually like to play on the teams that the light bulb kind of went on for them, maybe didn't have necessarily a good start to the conference or didn't necessarily have a good non-conference portion of their schedule. I know we're taught more data points is better, but I'd rather ride the hot hand at this point.
And that's an interesting question, you know, because obviously a lot of people look at conference play numbers because the non-conference schedules are just kind of all over the place. But I mean, look, conference play started over 2 months ago. And in some cases, you know, some of these teams played December conference games like the Big Ten. Hell, the ACC played, you know, a conference opener all the way back in October all the way back in November. So yeah, things change over the course of, you know, 8-9 weeks in college basketball. So that's something that you definitely want to take a look at, I think, is, you know, how these teams did recently, in particular teams with maybe first or second year head coaches like a UCLA. We knew it would take time for Mick Cronin to figure that thing out. They're playing a very different style of basketball than they previously did. Late in the year here, they played very, very well, were hot. And as you mentioned, maybe you ride that hot hand a little bit. You know, in particular, of course, with the fact that, you know, they draw a pretty decent seed line here to the point where, you know, they're not playing one of these early games. They're kind of getting potentially one of the weaker teams to advance out of the first round. So yeah. I definitely agree with your thoughts on that. The other point that you mentioned, UCLA and fan support. And obviously there are some conference tournaments, the MAC and the Big West, that will be played in empty arenas, which is obviously a very, very strange situation. But we think about trying to apply home court advantage as much as we can to these neutral site venues. How does this whole, you know, coronavirus thing sort of impact your thoughts on that, to where maybe a team like Kansas and Kansas City now has all the fans, as opposed to, you know, something that's a little bit more spread out, maybe UCLA a lot more represented here than any other team they were going to be anyway, but maybe more so now?
Great question. It depends. And also, I mean, I, again, don't want to get into politics, but West Coast, very left-leaning. If the fan base is not going to be, you know, willing to travel, it'd probably be some of these Pac-12 schools, considering just the way that they lean on the political spectrum. So I, you know what, you're right. You bringing up the Kansas thing, I think is something that's certainly possible. Although I think Midwest values, I think fan bases are probably a little bit less cautious. Let's just put it that way. And I'm going to be very delicate with my words again here, but that's something that it's going to have to be, you know, I'm going to have to almost flip on the TV and see what it actually looks like, and then go ahead and start betting it in game, because it's almost impossible to handicap prior.
No, that's an excellent point, and I think it kind of feeds into taking a look at a conference tournament like the SEC, because the SEC conference tournament is in Nashville. That one starts tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern time, the first game between Georgia and Ole Miss. Nashville's a tourist destination, man. Yep. You know, everybody gets excited to be there. I was actually there the weekend of the conference tournament last year, saw a lot of Kentucky stuff, which is not a big surprise. Saw a decent bit of Tennessee stuff as well. Again, not a big surprise. Saw more Auburn stuff than I expected to, but you know, Auburn last year, very, very good team. This year, a solid team, but maybe not as good as they were last year. When you look at the SEC futures market here, Kentucky here plus 235 favorite, Auburn 325. LSU's gotten some love this week. It seems now a little bit higher than 5-1. Florida's about 6-1. Mississippi State 8-1. And then big double digit numbers on down from there. I mean, this thing is Kentucky's to lose, because it generally is year in and year out. But I mean, who challenges the Wildcats?
Ooh, great question. The team that probably, they don't get a good draw, though, because they don't get, an extra bye. The Florida Gators, who fell to a 5 seed, I think are relatively dangerous. I wouldn't be a bit surprised Florida can win at least a couple games, you know, beat the winner of Ole Miss, Georgia, and then beat Mississippi State. That would be a team. Yeah, I think Auburn's overrated. I really do. It's a team that had a stretch where, in a 5-game stretch, they played 4 overtime games and won all 4 overtime. I think Auburn is the 2 seeds overrated, but I'm not going to, break barriers here and come up with some fantastic long shot. I think Kentucky deserves to be the favorite. I'll be relatively surprised if Kentucky doesn't cut down the nets. They're the best team. They've had basically one bad half against Tennessee down the stretch of the season here. They're playing their best ball of the season. They'll have the fan support. I mean, if you look historically since, Patino got the program back, right path in the early 90s, Kentucky in the SEC tournament is about as dominant as any team in any conference tournament across the countries. And that's not only straight up, that's also against the spread, specifically in the semifinals and the championship game. Kentucky's going to win it, in my opinion.
Well, and of course, I know you like to look at that luck metric over at Ken Pomeroy's website. Auburn, according to that metric, the 7th luckiest team in college basketball this year. By the way, Texas A&M is 10th, so maybe Texas A&M could be a fade team there in that game against Missouri coming up on Thursday night. But, it's tough. I mean, Nashville, again, like I said, tourist destination. I would say it's an intimate setting in a lot of those small bars where they're just packed to the gills. I'm kind of curious to see how all the dynamics play out there, especially, because you generally do get a good showing from a lot of the fan bases, but maybe it is largely Kentucky that travels here. So maybe their home court edge even expands a little bit more there. There are a couple of teams I want to ask you about. Unfortunately, they play each other in the second round, and then the winner would play Kentucky. Tennessee and Alabama. And Alabama is the one that I kind of focused on in particular, because I want to get your thoughts on this as far as major conference tournaments go. Alabama has upside. They have a ceiling. They can score a ton of points. They push the pace. They make you uncomfortable. They shoot a shit ton of threes. That's kind of a team that you sort of want to take a look at in this higher variance conference tournament environment. On the other hand, if they shoot bad in one game, they're done. And if it's the first game, they don't get you anywhere from a futures standpoint. So in terms of teams that maybe you take a look at to sort of throw some chaos and upset the apple cart a little bit, do you want a team that's really good on defense, or do you want that really good, possibly high variance offense?
Oh, wow. Tough question. To me, I'd probably prefer the defense, because I just think it travels better and you're at a neutral site. You're away from home. I like more consistency. I like to prefer, when I look at the conference tournaments, I prefer to look at how teams perform to expectation as far as their road record and their neutral site record already this season. So, I mean, if I had to play on anything, I'd probably play on the more consistent team defensively than the offensive team. But again, that's what makes college basketball, at least this year, a little bit tougher. I think the variances are more this year. And particularly, you look at 3-point shooting. They moved it back this year, and you have this is across the country. teams are only making about 33% of their shots. It's down more than a percent from last year, and it's the worst ever since they instituted the three-point line back in 1987. But yet teams are still shooting the second most amount of three-pointers ever. So you're still chucking them up there, but you're just not making them. That creates higher variance. So I could see you saying that if Alabama gets hot, there's certainly a team that's dangerous. But again, I give me consistency right now, because you got to have consistency to do it three times in 3 days. Give me the team that can play defense.
Well, that's an important thing, consistency. And sometimes that comes down to depth, too. So yeah, follow-up
question
here.
That's another good point.
With regards to the SEC tournament, and obviously we could talk about this, with the next conference tournament as well, the Big 12, but that's a little bit smaller of a field. You've got to win probably 4 games in 4 days if you're going to win this, as one of the teams that's not a top seed. I don't think the bottom 4 seeds can win 5 and 5. But, you get the top 4 into the quarterfinals, they still have to win 3 games in 3 days. So this back-to-back angle, which is unique to conference tournaments and those, early season showcase tournaments in November and, around Thanksgiving, stuff like that. How does that factor into your handicap with these back-to-back-to-back environments?
So there's another thing that you can use, KenPom, and I use this as the conference tournaments go on. He's got, a bench rating, which, analyzes how much do you utilize your bench as far as the percentage of minutes. And certainly when you're into those teams playing, 3 games in 3 days, 4 games in 4 days or whatnot, or you get a team that plays a multiple overtime game, has to play the next week. What are teams that I'm looking to fade? Certainly the ones that don't utilize the bench as much. And those teams, some of the major conference teams, Syracuse is a team that doesn't use much, their bench. Maryland doesn't use much of their bench. Villanova, Creighton, a lot of those teams don't. Meanwhile, the teams that it's advantageous for that use their bench, like a West Virginia, a team that's performed quite well in the Big 12 tournament. The team likes to press, and teams have tired legs, and West Virginia can throw 8, 9, 10 guys at your way on a night in and night out basis. So I look at that metric specifically, try that more than any other time during the course of a season, KenPom's bench minutes.
Other thing then, as far as the back-to-backs go, blowouts. Because, I mean, we get them. We get teams that are able to take a foot off the gas, kind of rest some guys, stuff like that. We also get teams that, kind of roll over and die, and then they wind up, getting blown out here in this conference tournament setting. But teams coming off of a big win. Now, I think as a general rule, and I don't have any data to back this up. I wish I did. Wish we had Ralph Michaels here to look stuff up for us on the fly there in that Killer Sports database. But as a general rule, a lot of people would say, okay, a blowout win is a positive because you don't have to play out the whole game. You can let your starters play 26, 27 minutes. They're okay to bounce back. On the flip side, maybe some complacency can set in a little bit. You get out of your normal rhythm. You get out of what got you that big lead in the first place. Maybe that has a carryover effect to the next game. I'm going to take away the case-by-case basis answer because I know that's where you were going to go. But what do you do primarily? What way do you sort of lean when you get a blowout? Are you looking to play on that team again, or are you fearful of that slow start?
Probably more against that team. Maybe a sense of overconfidence. And let's face it, public gets involved more than any other time during college basketball. They're itching to bet. And if they see a team won the night before by 30 points, they physically watch the game. All these games are televised. They're going to be more prone to bet on that team. So I think you're paying a premium. So if you're asking me blindly, what do I want to do, play on or against? Probably against.
All right. So let's talk Big 12 here. You mentioned West Virginia, a team that generally makes some runs in this conference tournament. I do like them at 7-1. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there right away. But Kansas, your favorite, minus 125. And look, Kansas only lost one of their 18 conference games. Baylor, the 2 seed here, 15-3 in conference play, plus 270 for them. Now, they do get a tough draw on the bottom of this bracket in the sense that they probably wind up playing, a TCU team that played very well against them, a West Virginia team that's very good in this conference tournament. But Kansas here does draw the winner of Texas and Texas Tech, which is no picnic either.
No.
I get why Kansas is the favorite, but, I mean, a minus 125 favorite, there's got to be value on somebody else, right?
Yeah, I'd probably look more towards West Virginia, although not particularly thrilled with their draw, but certainly a 6 seed that You know, it could easily beat anybody on any given night. And they just proved it by beating Baylor over the weekend. So it was a West Virginia team that has to have a new, you know, sense of confidence after they didn't play very well there for quite a bit of time there in the month of February, losing 6 out of 7 games, but finally getting back on track with a big win over Baylor. I would say that's the team I'm looking, but again, I know it's boring. Doesn't make for good radio. Again, it'll come down to matchups and a game in and game out basis. But if you're looking to bet a future, sure, why not? A little pizza money on West Virginia.
I got to say, man, I wonder about a team like Texas Tech. And this is another question that we get in conference tournaments where a lot of people do like to play on these teams, both ATS and also from a future standpoint, that didn't really live up to expectations. And if you look at somewhere like Bart Torvik's website, barttorvik.com, Texas Tech is a top 25 team. They're the number 22 team in the country for him. They went 9-9 in conference play. And they don't have Jarrett Culver. They don't have that scorer like they had, last year and 2 years ago. They lost 4 in a row down the stretch coming into the tournament, but they lost by 3 in overtime at Baylor and by 4 against Kansas. These are always interesting teams to me because you have an elite head coach in Chris Beard. You've got that defense travels kind of team like we've already talked about. They get a tough draw against the Texas team that's got a high sense of urgency, and then Kansas if they beat the Longhorns. These are the types of teams that give me a real hard time because I want to find ways to play them, but it's tough. You know, you either don't get a futures price or you don't get the right draw.
Good point there. And usually, come on, if you're betting futures, I mean, there's a reason why the hold on them is 30, 40% for the books. You're usually, more often than not getting a deal on those. And you're certainly, I don't think, getting a great deal with Texas Tech because they just got a really bad draw. Texas playing some of their best basketball of the season, and then you got Kansas. I just don't see the path for Texas Tech to win this. I mean, kudos if they do. I mean, that'll be an incredible run for them. But a lot of it comes down to the draw and where you can see these teams. You know, you can find a path for them. To me, if you're looking to bet any future, start with a team that's hot, playing their best basketball season, and what kind of draw do they get? Can you see the path for them to get a favorable draw, favorable matchups moving forward? But then again, that can get thrown out the window by one little upset or whatnot. So again, believe it or not, Adam, I'm not a big futures guy when it comes to the college basketball in these tournaments.
No, that's fair. And I think in a lot of cases, a money line rollover is going to be the way to go.
Absolutely. That's the way to go.
And especially, I think if you like Texas Tech, I mean, obviously a money line rollover winds up being a little bit difficult because as I look out there in the market, they're a 5.5-point favorite against Texas in that first game. So they're going to be a pretty substantial money line favorite in that game. If you like them, maybe you start the money line rollover with that Kansas game, roll it over into the Baylor game. If you do like them, that's probably going to be somewhere around that, you know, plus 650 price tag anyway. But that's always interesting too, reading the context of the market in that, look, Texas is, according to some people, a bubble team. You know, maybe they get in, maybe they don't, maybe they need this game against Texas Tech to get in. Torvik has that line minus 4.5. I'm sure KenPom's in the same place. The market has the lower seed, Texas Tech, minus 5.5, minus 6. To me, that tells you something about both Texas and Texas Tech. And sometimes you can get some cheap ATS winners if you just kind of read the signs that are out there in the betting market.
Yeah, that would be a good point. We're the lower seed. And you find this always during the regular season, the unranked team that's favored over the ranked team is a profitable system. Yeah, you get those context clues, no question about it. One thing I do want to stress home, be very wary of, betting on the bubble teams, the teams that have been inconsistent because that's why they're on the bubble. They've been inconsistent. And now they're in a high-pressure situation where they have to win a game or two to make their way onto the NCAA, getting an at-large berth. A lot of extra pressure, but yet people want to bet on that team, creating a premium. So that's one point I want to drill home here. And certainly both, specifically Texas, you got to be very careful. I don't think you're necessarily paying a premium on the Longhorns, but just to throw out a team as we're taping this on Wednesday, like Xavier, a team that probably needs to win at least a game or two in the Big East. A lot of money pouring in on Xavier. If you want to bet on the bubble team, do it as early as possible because the whole world wants to bet on them. And I don't think you can win money long-term betting, you know, an hour before tip on the bubble team.
No, that's an excellent point. Again, they're in a must-win situation for a reason. You know, if you're a good team, your must-win situation is like a conference title or, you know, a division title or the World Series or the finals or so. That's your must-win spot. You know, if your must-win spot is just to get to being one of the, you know, 68 teams that makes the NCAA tournament, you know, you're probably not very good, at least not in a relative sense. Yep. So that is a very, very excellent point there. Among a lot of excellent points made on today's segment with Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, what's going on over at the website right now, man?
Two things. Football newsletter, $79. Spring football newsletter comes out next week. So you can check that out at BradPowersSports.com. March Madness VIP service, $99. Check that out at BradPowersSports.com.
And, of course, something else we didn't even touch on that I know that you're going to do over at the website, NIT, CBI, CIT, the better betting opportunities are in those as opposed to the NCAA tournament.
Oh, absolutely, because you get to those tournaments where a lot of people are excited to be there, and then other teams not so much. Everyone's excited to be in the NCAA tournament.
Absolutely. So definitely be on the lookout for that over at BradPowersSports.com. And, of course, make sure you follow Brad on Twitter, at BradPowers and the number 7. Brad, a pleasure as always, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for having me on.